case on our 9 o'clock docket is Schombacher. Did I say that correctly?
Schombacher,
okay. And versus REI Electric and Garland. All right, Mr. Foster.
May it please the court. This case is a lawsuit by my client, Paul Schombacher, against the defendants REI Electric and Garland Insulating for causing a house fire. The defendants in this case filed a traditional motion for summary judgment, which the court granted, and also at the same time struck some of the evidence that Mr. Schombacher submitted in support of his response to their traditional motion for summary judgment. The issue in this case is whether or not Mr. Schombacher was in privity with REI and Garland with regard to their work on the home in question. The operative facts, if you will, that relate to the creation of these two contracts are that Mr. Schombacher was building this home. And he got to the point in the construction of the home where he was required to have some electric work done. He contacted REI Electric by phone and told them that he was Paul Schombacher and he wanted them to do some work on a home. They agreed to do the work. Mr. Schombacher provided them with the plans and specifications, supervised their work, and there were two stages to this work. This was the initial rough-in. After the initial rough-in was completed, REI sent an invoice for that work to a company by the name of SCC, which was a company that was owned by Mr. Schombacher's brother and for which Mr. Schombacher had previously worked, because they assumed at that point in time the contract was between REI and SCC.
REI assumed.
Okay. A check was then issued in payment of the invoice by Mr. Schombacher personally. When the president of REI got that check, he says he realized that he wasn't working for SCC anymore, that he was working for Paul. REI did some additional electrical work. And this is the electrical work that we say is the basis of our, in our petition, the basis of our claim under these circumstances. And REI was paid for the work. They again sent the invoice to SCC. The president of REI said, well, I knew Paul was Scott's brother, and I just let it go. Paul Schombacher then paid REI for the work. The operative facts with regard to Garland are similar. Garland provides insulation services. Mr. Schombacher got to the point in the construction of the home where he needed insulation services, and they also do it in stages. He called the Garland and requested that they provide insulation services and gave them the plans and specs. They came out, did the work. Again, they sent the bill to SCC, assuming that was who they were working for.
But didn't Garland have a subcontractor written agreement?
It had a subcontractor written agreement with SCC, Your Honor.
And REI did not?
REI did not.
Okay.
At least that's the summary judgment evidence.
Okay.
Anyway. Garland then was paid one installment by Mr. Schombacher on a personal check. They did some additional work. They sent the invoice again to to SCC, and Mr. Schombacher again paid for that. The evidence, summary judgment evidence, even without considering what was struck in by the trial court, establishes that. The evidence establishes that nobody from SCC ever talked to either REI or Garland with regard to their work on this house. I think under most circumstances, if you ask this question as to whether or not Mr. Schombacher was in privity based on those facts to a first-year law student in a contracts case, they would say certainly they were. So what happened in this case to indicate that Mr. Schombacher wasn't? There's two things that are relied on by the defendants to establish Mr. Schombacher didn't have privity. The first one is an assertion that Mr. Schombacher admitted he didn't have a contract with either REI or Garland. And let me back up just a second and say that the court struck Mr. Schombacher's affidavit in support of the response to the motion for summary judgment. Continually, the defendants have asserted that that is a complete reversal of Mr. Schombacher's testimony as contained in his deposition. And I would suggest to the court that it's not a reversal of his testimony as to what the facts were. The deposition testimony and the testimony in the affidavit are totally consistent with regard to what the facts were in the case. Where the affidavit and the deposition testimony vary is in the affidavit, there is no conclusion, legal conclusion, as to whether or not the contract was with anybody. That's left to the court, as it properly should be. In his deposition, counsel for REI asked, well, based upon the facts that you know, what is your opinion as to who the contract was with? And he said, well, SCC, I think. He also said immediately thereafter that that was based upon the facts that he had testified to in the case, which were consistent with the affidavit. He also subsequently testified just immediately thereafter that, well, if the invoice didn't get paid, who would be obligated to pay the invoice? And he said, well, SCC and me both, which is inconsistent with the idea that the contract was just with SCC. And I would suggest that because the only difference in the affidavits is these conclusions, as opposed to what the facts are, that the court should not have stricken the affidavit. REI took one tract trying to spring the trap on Mr. Schombacher based upon the testimony, his opinion. They ask that it be stricken under the sham affidavit doctrine, which I don't think this court has accepted. But even under the circumstances, if the court did accept it, because the testimony is consistent with the facts, and the only difference is a legal conclusion, that the doctrine is not applicable here. REI took attack, well, this is a judicial admission. He's judicially admitted that there was a contract. And the basis for that is the Supreme Court Mendoza case, which I'm sure the court is familiar with, which requires any type of testimonial declaration to be more than a quasi-admission, in other words, simply evidence, to be binding on the party. It's got to be clear and unequivocal. And in this particular situation, it's got to be a clear and unequivocal statement of fact, not a legal opinion, that Mr. Schombacher, who I don't think has any legal training, comes up with based upon the testimony as to what the facts in the case were. And I would suggest to the court that the Mendoza judicial admission is not applicable to the case because the testimony, if you look at all the testimony that's in the summary judgment evidence, you look at just the page that they're referring to when they deal with this judicial admission, it's very clear that this is not a factual statement that Mr. Schombacher is making. He's stating an opinion. He qualifies the opinion, I think, and then immediately thereafter says something, again, a legal conclusion, that conflicts with what that was. That's certainly not a clear statement that a person should be bound by in a deposition. I mean, deposition is not a minefield that you walk through and somebody steps on a mine, whoop, the case is over. The other thing they rely on are some negotiations and contracts between Mr. Schombacher and SEC prior to the time that the contract with REI and Garland was entered into. Now, the evidence is conclusive that neither Garland nor REI had any knowledge of any contract between SEC and Paul Schombacher, either the written contract or the oral contract. And in this situation, when Mr. Schombacher decided to build a house, he went to his brother, they discussed it, and they entered into a written contract where SEC is identified as the contractor and Paul Schombacher is identified as the purchaser or person that's going to purchase the home. At the same time, they entered into an oral understanding is, despite what this contract says, Paul, you're going to take care of this house. The only thing we're going to do is give to you a list of contractors, and you can use them or you can't use them. It's up to you. We'll let you use our trade name, Sterling Classic Custom Homes, if you want to try to get discounts. And if we get any invoices from any of these contractors, we'll submit them to you for payment. That's the full extent of his agreement with SEC. Mr. Schombacher never used, the evidence, summary judgment evidence is, he never used this trade name in entering into the agreement with REI and Garland. I see my time's up. Sorry.
It goes quickly, doesn't it?
Goes quickly.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Foster. Mr. Wolf.
If it pleases the court, I'm going to put my appellate hat on for just a couple moments and then respond to his brief as the appellee. And I've got just a few moments to do that. Jeffrey Wolf on behalf of the appellant, cross-appellant, appellee, REI Electric. This does involve a house fire, as has been explained to you, but a little more background about the case. It was originally a subrogation case that Assurance Company of America had brought against REI, Garland, and others. There was a settlement of that case, and then Assurance sought to recover that amount in the subrogation action. There was a settlement of that original case, and Assurance assigned its rights to REI. That's important because that provides the basis for the counterclaim that's being asserted by REI in this case. And based upon the assigned rights, REI then filed an insurance fraud counterclaim against Mr. Schombacher after Mr. Schombacher intervened as a plaintiff in the underlying action. And so to put this in context, the question is whether, in response to a no-evidence motion for summary judgment that Mr. Schombacher filed, whether there was some evidence or a scintilla of evidence to support that. That's the issue for this court. The fraud claim, I think, is illustrated. Assurance paid $77,000 of its policy to Schombacher based on his representation that he had paid that amount to SEC Limited, that's his brother's company that's been referred to, also known as Sterling Homes, the general contractor. That's who was identified as a general contractor throughout all of the testimony in this case. During discovery, however, when we took the deposition of Mr. Schombacher's brother, his name is Scott, REI learned that no money had ever been paid to SEC, as Schombacher had represented in making his insurance claim. We were able to obtain an affidavit from the insurance adjuster, Mr. Steve Dickens, who handled that particular claim. Mr. Schombacher submitted a claim for reimbursement of this $77,000 fee, and it was paid to SEC, that he claimed was paid to SEC Homes to serve as a general contractor in constructing the house. The affidavit testimony shows that in reliance upon that claim, Assurance paid the $77,000 for reimbursement of the fee. And there's prima facie evidence as well that the fee was never paid. I don't know how you can do better than that in response to a no evidence motion for summary judgment. We provided not only a scintilla of evidence, but we also provided a prima facie case of the elements of fraud. Perhaps that's the only really legitimate claim in this entire case at this point in the proceedings.
But was there evidence? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
the pleadings that I read that were initially filed by the insurance company seeking subrogation was talking about a number of $495,000.
That's correct.
Is that how much they paid?
That's how much they paid to Mr. Schombacher.
Yes.
There was a settlement after
then
that.
Your counterclaim.
We settled and we acquired that claim from the insurance company.
And then what you're seeking the recovery was $77,000.
That's correct. We stepped into the shoes of Assurance Company of America through our settlement agreement, and we're seeking to recover back $77,000 that was paid based upon a fraud that was perpetrated on the insurance company. Okay.
Well, what do we know from the record about how the $77,000 relates to Mr. Schombacher's claim?
We know from the affidavit of Mr. Dickens it was submitted as a reimbursement, as a fee paid to the general contractor.
As part of the damages from the fire?
No, it was submitted as a reimbursement claim, okay. Not as the damages to the fire. And it was paid as a reimbursement of the general contractor's fee. So it's separate and apart from the damages. There were other damages that were submitted to the insurance company related to the fire, but the $77,000 was a pure reimbursement fee, and that's set forth in Mr. Dickens' affidavit. So I believe that's a claim that will be, I hope the court agrees, will be alive and well when the appeal is concluded. Now I'll put my other hat on, if I may, and switch over to the appellee side. And I want to focus in, if I may, on what I think were the important arguments that had just been raised. I think that the case turns on more than just privity. I think the case, the economic loss doctrine, applies irrespective of privity. There's cases out of this court, the Nortex case. There's the Jim Walter Holmes case. If the damage is to the product itself, in this case the home, economic loss doctrine would bar the tort claim. So I think that on the basis of that well-established law, that the economic loss doctrine would carry the day with respect to those claims. I think the privity issue deals with the issue of the breach of contract, the breach of the implied warranty or express warranties that are involved in this case. And I want to deal, first of all, with the evidence considering the affidavit and then briefly talk about this sham affidavit issue if the court would like towards the end. But I think it's important to look at what the evidence in the case actually was. The deposition testimony was at page 48 of the deposition that SEC was responsible for hiring the subcontractors, according to Mr. Schombacher. At page 51 of his testimony, that SEC was the general contractor. They supplied the contractors to do the work, and they did the invoicing. At page 66 of his depositions, they were, again, he confirmed that SCC Homes provided the subcontractors and dealt with all of the invoices in the case. The key testimony, I believe, this is page 82 and 83 in the deposition, that the subcontractors on the project sent their invoices to SCC. The question was there agreement with SCC Homes or with Paul Schombacher? Mr. Schombacher answered affirmatively, SCC, I would think, and the question was, and that is because, as we talked about, in their minds, if they're asked to do some work by Paul Schombacher, they associate you with SEC. He had been a foreman for his brother's company. And you didn't have any other discussion with them about the nature of your arrangement with SEC on this house. That's a fair assumption. He never told them that this was Paul Schombacher in his individual capacity. In fact, every invoice for this house was sent to SEC Homes before it was paid. The fact that an owner pays an invoice doesn't change who the contracting parties are. And there was a contract, in this case, between REI and SCC. That's who they sent their invoices to. That is the contract in this particular case from REI's perspective. So I want to put that in context for the court.
Mr. Wood,
yes,
REI's contract was an oral contract.
Well, there was actually more than that. The invoice was sent and accepted and approved by SCC.
The invoice itself and the verbal agreement that you're going to supply the electrical services on this construction.
We supplied electrical services on all of SCC Homes projects. Paul, who had acted as a foreman on behalf of his brother's company, called us up, said, we all come out and do the electrical on this house. We assumed it was just another job for SCC Homes. It was never disclosed anything to the contrary. So we did the work. We sent the invoices to SCC Homes. And then he sent a personal check to pay for it, but that's that's normal in a situation an owner often pays for the work.
You just said contract, and I wanted to understand clearly what you're referencing.
The subcontract was with SCC Homes.
And I understand that.
There was a written contract, as you understand, between SCC Homes and Mr. Schombacher.
I understand all about it.
Sure.
I've read all this.
Sure.
I want to understand what your contention. And if I understand your contention, it is we have a regular course of business with Sterling Homes or SCC.
That's correct.
And when we had this regular course of business, whenever Mr. Paul Schombacher said, I want you to do a construction job for me on this house over here, it was just another piece of business.
That's correct.
As far as your client was concerned, and they didn't come out with a separate independent contract for the work to be done on that business in writing, but rather just worked with the normal course of business and did the work, submitted invoices, and the invoices were submitted to SCC. Then they got paid by Paul.
That's correct.
Okay. That's your contention of that's how the contract
And worked. I think the parties all agree that SCC provided this list of subcontractors that could be used on this project. There was a contractual arrangement between Paul Schombacher and his brother's company that here's our list of contractors, and there's preferential pricing given to these folks that you work for on a regular basis. So,
and in order to get the preferential pricing, it would have needed to have been a deal or a contract arrangement between SCC and REI.
Exactly, Your Honor. That's our point. What we saw happen in the affidavit was an attempt to change that and say that he personally contracted. If you closely look at that affidavit, I don't think he actually says that he contracted with these people or ever disclosed that he was contracting in his personal capacity with either of these subcontractors involved in this case. To the extent he is doing so, to the extent he's repudiating his former testimony, I would think that there's an about-face, particularly with the testimony at page 82, which says the subcontractors on this project who sent their invoices to SEC was their agreement with SEC or Schombacher, and he affirmatively said SEC. To the extent he's changing who he says the contract was of the subcontractors was with, he's done his 180 about-face. I know this court in a number of different cases, starting with Davis and several cases I know that Justice Gardner's been involved in, have looked at the sham affidavit issue. This may very well be the case that it would apply to if he's done a 180-degree turn, and I believe that's what Judge Cosby felt was going on and why he applied it. I think there is a place for the sham affidavit doctrine in Texas. 166AH deals with bad faith affidavits. Consistent with that, I think the sham affidavit doctrine, when you do an about face without an explanation, there's no explanation here. So there's an additional argument, and I'll let my co-counsel deal with that. We brought these arguments together before they came up on appeal, sham affidavit plus the quasi-judicial admission, and I'll defer to my co-counsel on that.
Before you leave, can I ask you one more question?
Yes, sir.
The invoices I'm looking at here are titled REI Electric, Inc., with a post office box in Springtown, Texas, and it says bill to, and then there is a description of what the work was done, and a rate and an amount, but no other terms.
Yes, those invoices were sent straight to SCC Home.
Well, my question is, am I looking at the first page of an invoice, or is this the entire invoice that's attached here to the affidavit of Paul Schombacher, that is, I'm looking at on page 306 of the record.
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at the invoices,
just
Your Honor. I know they're in the record.
Yeah, if it's your contention that the invoices are part of the contract, I want to be careful we're looking at the whole invoice.
Sure.
You can look at
that. I've got a little bit of rebuttal time, and I'll look real quick
and
try to get you that answer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. And now Mr. Whistler, correct? I think we're staying in our proper order here.
That's right. Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. We do have similar arguments. There are some slight differences in the way we're looking at the law, but we believe that Judge Cosby did not err. The summary judgment should be affirmed. Our case is simple. We believe that Mr. Schombacher admitted that he hired a general contractor. That general contractor was SCC Homes, and that he admitted and he knows that my client, Garland, had a contract, a pre-existing contract, with SEC Homes. and that that's the contract under which Garland was operating in this case. And I think the arguments that were made by Mr. Schombacher, both in the trial court and in the briefing in this case and in the argument today, actually assumes, as Justice Meyer was pointing out, the existence of that contractual relationship between SCC and Garland. I mean, he is banking on getting those reduced rates. That's a negotiated reduced rate. That's a component part of the contractual relationship between SCC and Garland. And he wants to get that rate, but he also wants to say that he has his own contract to which those negotiated rates are not a part. So I think Mr. Foster is actually faced with a rather difficult, if not a Hobson's choice here. Either he has to admit that what we're contending that he did admit, which is the general contract relationship with SCC and the subcontractor relationship between Garland and SCC, or he has to admit to a scheme to defraud Garland, that is, to fool Garland into thinking, because he's going to use Sterling's name, or I'm not going to tell them who they're actually working for, but I'm going to get them to invoice me the reduced rates without telling them who they're really working for and without having to negotiate that really good deal myself. So I don't think he wants to do that. And I think when you actually listen to, read the briefing, and look at the argument that Mr. Schombacher is presenting, I don't see a denial of the general contractor relationship with SCC or a denial of that pre-existing contractual relationship between Garland and SCC. He's simply trying to make an argument that he is also a part of that contract and that he's in privity. And I think that that's where he misses the point. We've cited the cases, the Jensen Construction case, that suggest that the owner, where there's a general contractor, the owner's got to look to the general contractor, and the general contractor can look to the subcontractor. And it works in the opposite way as well. The cases suggest that the subcontractor can't go directly to the owner. So there is this legally recognized network of relationships that is based on privity, on negotiated agreements. And as Mr. Foster has pointed out, there was no meeting of the minds between Garland and SCC and Mr. Schombacher. I mean, there just was no understanding. In fact, Mr. Schombacher is admitting that he's assuming that Garland and REI are believing that they're working for REI.
So was it your position, by virtue of the summary judgment evidence that we have on record, that Mr. Schombacher was really acting as an agent for SSC?
Well, that's the assumption that I think Mr. Schombacher has admitted to, and certainly that Garland is taking, is that they were invited to come do a job by an employee of SSC, the way they had done many, many times before, under the terms of a pre-negotiated, so that the rates didn't have to be discussed, the working relationship didn't have to be discussed, because all that groundwork's been laid. They get a call from a superintendent of SCC saying, I want you to work on a house. And they go out and do the job. And then they invoice in SCC, and they get paid. And
So they don't re-sign a subcontractor or independent contractor agreement on every job site?
No, they've got an operating agreement where the rates are negotiated, and those are the rates that get billed. So that part of the scheme worked. Necessity is the mother of invention, and the only reason we've got to have this variety now and invention of extra contractual relationships is because of the privity requirement. And the privity requirement is a required component part of each of Mr. Schombacher's cause of action. Breach of contract, breach of implied or express warranty, and my understanding of the economic loss rule under the Supreme Court authority, Jim Walters, is that in the absence of privity, a party cannot sue another party for damages where those damages are the subject matter of a contract between other parties, and that's exactly what we've got here.
Is where in this mass of records, and I confess to you, I've read a good bit of this, but I can't tell you I've read all of this, but I've read as much of it as I could before we got here today. What part of where in the record, in the summary judgment evidence, Is there a copy of the operating agreement you're contending is an agreement in writing that's between SEC and Garland?
You know, I'd have to go back and review that myself. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that it's in there.
Well, thank you very much. I thought you just might.
You betcha. And so I don't want to start another point. If there's any further questions. Okay. Well, I'll return the rest of my time. I think they've got more complicated arguments to make. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Let's see. So we have Mr. Foster next. Or last, I guess, at this point.
Last, Your Honor.
Okay.
To answer Justice Meyer's claim, I don't know where it is in the record, but counsel has attached a copy to his brief. Garland, it's appendix number 2. First of all, just responding to the claim of REI based upon alleged fraud by Mr. Schombacher and the settlement of his insurance claim. There is no evidence anywhere in the record as to the content of the insurance policy. There's no way this court can look at that insurance policy and say, okay, here's the policy, these were the obligations of the parties, and here's what Mr. Schombacher said, and that is material with regard to the obligation of the parties. That evidence simply doesn't exist. That was the basis of our no evidence motion for summary judgment, and I think the trial court should be affirmed with regard to that. Counsel, when he was talking about it, said this is a reimbursement fee. Well, if that's the case, show us in the policy where it is, where they are obligated to reimburse based on that. He does not do that. And that's why he did not put on sufficient evidence of all of the elements of his fraud claim with regard to materiality. Counsel for REI mentioned that they believe, even without privity, the economic loss rule somehow exempts their client from a claim for negligence. The fallacy that they have with that argument is that if there is privity between Paul Schombacher and REI, then that is the contract that we look at. The rule that he cites and he relies on is, well, the Supreme Court says if it's just damages to the subject matter of the contract, then the economic loss rule prohibits a tort claim. Well, in this case, the contract was to put in electrical services. They burned down the house. The damages are substantially in excess of the subject matter of the contract between Paul Schombacher and REI. And I think the economic loss rule, and I think Garland recognizes that the privity would prevent the economic loss rule from operating. Counsel, through this process that we've been going through, has never explained to the court how there is no contract between REI and Paul Schombacher when REI's own president admits he knew he was working for Paul Schombacher. Plus, the evidence is absolutely clear that nobody from SEC ever requested or dealt with either of the defendants with regard to this home. It was all done through Paul Schombacher. And he's right. He didn't call up REI or Garland and say, hey, I'm doing my house and I want you to do this for my own individual account and come out and do this. He didn't say that. He just simply said, this is Paul Schombacher. If that's a deception, if that's an effort to get a beneficial pricing that he knew might be given based upon their assumptions, well, maybe that's the case, and they need to sue us for that. It doesn't give them the right to burn down Mr. Schombacher's house without any liability. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Foster. Thank you, Mr. Wolf. And Mr. Whistler, we appreciate all of your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is... Did I? Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry if I was about to shortchange you.
That's fine, Your Honor. It pleases the court. With respect to materiality, if there had been an insurance contract issue about materiality, they certainly could have provided that as evidence. They didn't. If they'd paid the fee, they sure certainly could have put that on as evidence. They didn't. They filed a no evidence, and we have an adjuster that says that he relied upon it and paying it as a reimbursement, and I think that's material. If you rely upon it in order to make a payment, I don't know how more material that can be. I did not find in the record that I brought with me, Your Honor, the actual invoice. I believe it is in the record, but at page 93 and 94 of Mr. Schombacher's deposition, he explained that each of the subcontractors, and particularly REI, was required to send its invoices for the project to Sterling Classic Custom Homes. His testimony is, you believe that's what all the subcontractors would have done with the invoices on this case? They should have. That's what was supposed to have been done? Technically, yeah. I think that again shows the contractual relationship was between SCC Homes and REI and Garland. The fact that we later found out that the owner was paying the bill is of no consequence. I mean, we found out that we were working, that there was an owner involved. That doesn't suddenly create a contract that doesn't otherwise exist. The contract was clear. The judicial admission was clear under the Cortez case. I think the court could find that he judicially admitted himself out of court under that case. If you don't want to address the sham affidavit doctrine, and for all those reasons, Your Honor, we would ask for reversal on our cross appeal and to sustain the trial court summary judgment rulings.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Thank you, Mr. Foster and Mr. Whistler again. We appreciate your arguments today. That concludes our submissions for this morning. So we'll ask the clerk to now adjourn us.